Welcome to Comics,
episode 221. This week, we talk about
The Rift.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
Twitter, apparently, Jin Luen Yang doesn't follow us, but thanked us for the insightful episodes and talked as if he had listened to them. So apparently we have a new listener to Welcome to Comics, and it's Jin Luen Yang.
Wait, he listened to us and then unfollowed us?
No, he did. No, he hasn't followed us, but he's tweeted at us telling us that he liked the show.
Okay. I thought you meant that he listened to the episodes and then was like,
fuck this noise.
No. So, I would say hi, Mr. Yang, but in the tradition of this show, if you tweet at us, we are now, personal friends. Just like Jimmy and Amanda and JM.
Sup, Gene?
Hi, Gene. Sup, hey, G-Dog?
You should call him G-Dog.
G-Dog.
You shouldn't call anyone G-Dog.
Never, never, ever. So that was fun. We've had a lot of people, like, in the industry tell us that they liked our show. I just wish more people in volume liked our show. If you like our show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and become a patron today so that we can keep doing this for another 4 years.
Shameless.
You talk as if we would stop.
I know.
Yeah, they can't get rid of us.
It's the love of comics that keep us going. Have you guys seen our Patreon page and our Patreon slogan?
No.
So in Patreon, you put in your name. So it goes name, and it says is creating, and then you put in what you're creating. So for ours, it says, welcome to comics, is creating, annoyingly persistent comics podcasts.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah. I've had people on Reddit tell me to stop doing this.
Have you really?
Yes.
Why? And you know what?
Fuck them, because they don't do podcasts.
Wait, why did they tell you to stop?
I don't know. Just those, like, this wasn't good. I'm going to downvote this every time I see it. Like, what?
That's all I have to say.
The tick did us really well. Our new Avatar listeners so far have really enjoyed the show. Hi, guys. Welcome. And, who was it? There was one specific, like, whenever I posted there, they would just shit all over my posts. I don't remember who it was.
Which subreddit are you posting in?
Usually, so I'll post in, r/comics, which always gets downvoted, and I don't know why. And then I also post in whatever other relevant Reddit there would be. So, like, we just did a bunch of tick episodes, so I was pushing those in r/the tick, and these are going in r/the last airbender.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't remember what that other one was. Shit on a stick. Oh well.
Man, that's...
Be mean, you know?
Because it's the internet.
You're crowding their little corner of the internet with your inanity.
Yes, I'm sorry for posting on your sub. My bad.
Secret. It was me.
Oh no!
Ah! No.
You're Hugh/douchey guy. Oh my god, twist.
Betrayal.
This is going to cause a rift between us.
A rift?
A rift.
Nice segue.
I heard about a rift this week.
So good. Such segue.
Such segue, many trends. You guys ready for this week's comic? Let's just get into it.
This week's comic.
I read it.
Hey, good.
I also read it.
Oh, yay, we all read the comic for the week. This week we read The Rift by Jin Luen Yang and art from Guri Hiru. And, you know, I don't think we've said yet, we've talked about Guri Hiru and what they are. I have a list of names of people who work for Guri Hiru, and I don't know if they're ones who did this one, But apparently it's a Japanese illustration name, which we talked about before, and the artists are Chifuyu Sasaki, Naoko Kawano.
Oh my god, Andy, don't try to do an accent, please.
I don't know whether or not I am. This is
This is me trying
to pronounce names based on what I've heard on One Piece, basically.
Don't stop. Please stop.
If I have an accent at all, it's because it's how I think the language is pronounced because of One Piece.
Your emphasis is all wrong.
Okay. How would you do it? It's in the notes. You can give it a shot.
All right. Let me. I should pull the notes up.
Yeah.
I was going to wing it tonight.
Oh, fuck it. We're doing it live.
Well, I always do it live. All right. So the artists, the team consists of Chifuyu Sasaki, Naoko Kawano, and that's it. It's just the two people.
All right.
Yeah. So okay. Chifuyu Sasaki and Naoko Kawano.
All right.
And they're based in the city of Sapporo.
Oh, Sapporo. I know Sapporo.
Sapporo.
Beer.
Yes, beer.
Beer.
Hooray, glorious beer.
Hey, man, beer's an important part of a balanced breakfast.
Always in the shower. Seriously, next time you think about it, have a beer in the shower.
I've never had a beer in the shower before, but I see things, I see videos of people drinking beers in the shower, and that doesn't make any sense.
I don't think it's the being in the shower part. I think it's the drinking a beer while being naked in a place where you're comfortable being naked.
I'm comfortable being
just
naked.
Just be on your couch.
House. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? Like.
Yeah. If you're 100% comfortable being naked on your couch with a beer, I think it's that feel. Like a bunch of people just don't do that, and it feels great.
No food in the bathroom for me. Like, no.
Yeah, see, that's, I agree with that.
Yeah. Why would you wanna poop in there?
Yeah, there's like poop particles.
My friend has a name for those. He calls them farticles.
Right? I mean, when you smell something, it's because a physical particle is hitting your nose, right?
Yeah.
So there's actually poop hitting your nose when you smell farts and stuff.
Oh man, I'm so sorry for all those game nights.
Yeah, you should be.
So yeah, speaking of drinking a beer in the shower, my first reaction reading this comic was that Aang looks super grown up.
Well, he is.
That was not a good segue.
Because now he's old enough to drink? No, not even yet. Soon he will be. I don't know.
Yes, he and Katara both look rather older than they did in the series, and I think older than they did in the first comic we read for this arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. And even Toph as well.
Yeah, Sokka not so much.
No.
I don't think he ever will.
But even in Korra, Sokka looks really similar. Yeah, and I think it's not just the way that they're drawn, like with their faces and stuff. I think the comic's done a really good job of changing the way that they dress to reflect their maturity. Like, Aang is wearing, like, airbending master robes, and Toph is wearing things more befitting a class of somebody who would own and teach at a school, rather than like in the show when she was just like wearing whatever the fuck she put on when she ran away.
Yeah. I think Katara's outfit changes as well, right? She starts wearing her hair down in like, I guess, it's more feminine than it was in the show. It used to be up and far more practical, I suppose.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes sense for the show, too, because you're out. They spend a lot of time on the road, and you're out trying to get around, trying to, you're out, you're more active, you might not be showering as often, you're camping more often, but now she's just she's the girlfriend of the Avatar. Like, I'm sure she showers as often as she wants. It's not a thing. So, how about we get past the superficial stuff? What did you guys think of this comic? I was really excited going into this comic because with the promise, I knew the promise was going to be about the beginning of Republic City. I think I was expecting more of it. I think that's why I rated it lower than I should have, because I thought we were going to get the full story of the founding of Republic City. And now I'm finding out as we've read more that was a thing. It was just going to be the beginning of the Republic City, the very beginning. And now we're going to kind of see it grow as time goes on around that area. But that's what I knew that was going to be about. And then with with the search, like, obviously, you know, that's about Zuko finding his mom. But with the Rift, I didn't go into this with any preconceived notions about what I was going to be reading. I had no idea what the story was going to be about. And it was really exciting for me to get it like that. To not have any expectation for the story whatsoever.
Yeah, I like you, had no idea really what this was going to be about. And it, you know, it's called the Rift, right? And I think there were multiple rifts that were explored in the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's the mending of the rift between, Toph and her father. And then we have the creation of the rift between, I don't know if, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, there is a rift between the human and the spirit world now because of Aang's interaction with, old Iron General. But then at the same time, the female spirit, I forget what her name was, you get kind of, mending of the rift to a certain degree, but, you know, it's there, right? There's obviously going to be people, there's obviously spirits on either side of the rift.
See, I think the main rift in this story is the rift between the future and the past.
Well, and see, there's another one that's
yeah.
There you go.
It's kind of the straightforward idea here is the rift between the spirit world and the human world. But Lady Crane Stork Woman. What the fuck was her actual name?
Tien Han or something like that.
Yeah, Tien something. I don't know. I'm sorry if you're listening to this, Gene. You wrote an amazing story, and I'm just not remembering character names. It's making it sound.
Tien Hai.
Yes. Tien Hai, like, she's saying it's not a rift between us and you. It's a rift between the way General Old Iron perceived the spirit world when it was just spirits and how it's going to be with humans. And that's just change. That's just time. It's not an actual rift between spirits and humans. Like, the humans were going to come whether the spirits wanted it or not. And the humans are going to do what the humans do, and the spirits are going to do what... Like, that's a rift that's inevitable. That's not a thing to navigate. The thing to navigate is how things change as you move into the future. And she was like, you just need to see it as humans love change and spirits don't.
Yeah, but even Aang is trapped in the past.
Yeah.
Like Old Iron General or whatever.
General like, Old Iron
General? I think anyway. We've had a lot of evidence that Yang is very tied in some bad ways to his past and his background as an airbender. But I also think that it's a rift between expectations and reality. Because Yang can't talk.
Aang.
Aang.
Because Aang and Yang Chen.
Yeah, because
see, cool. Because we are off the rails tonight.
Expects to be able to relive his past, and that simply does not happen because reality has changed in the past 100 years. Toph's father expects that his daughter should be a quiet, prim, proper lady, but she is a strong, sometimes brutish, like loud person instead.
She's the greatest earthbender of all time.
Of all time, yes. Like, even Katara with her water tribe friends expects them to react a certain way when they see her and is gravely disappointed when one of them just utterly shuns her.
Yeah. That was interesting. Yeah, oh man, earlier on I had a point when you were talking and then I just fucking forgot it. what was the first expectation you mentioned? Shit.
Oh, about Aang, how he expects to be able to just relive a day from his past.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. Okay, well for one, he was literally trapped in the past for a while. But the other thing that gets me is I really wish we would know how far removed this is from the events of the show. Because the show, seasons 1, 2, and 3, I think only span like 3 or 4 months. And so literally, he has to fight Ozai like within months of having gotten out of that thing of ice. Like the amount of progress he shows is insane. And then in these comics, they don't say how long it's been. Like, he'll say, Yang Chen's festival hasn't been celebrated in over 100 years. And I'm like, yes, I know. That's kind of the premise of the whole show. I get the 100-year thing. Thank you, though. But it's like, if you could say, hasn't been celebrated in at least 112 years, then I know, okay, Aang is like, what would it be, like 24? Okay, that's a little bit much. But he's obviously still, like, preteen, tween.
But does Aang know exactly how long he was in the ice?
I from what I can tell, he was in the ice exactly 100 years. I think it says that somewhere in the show.
I don't remember. It's been a while since I watched the show. Yeah. So.
But even because then we can have a general idea of how much Aang can have grown and changed and see that the world has changed while he was frozen in ice. Because I cannot believe that in that 100 years that he was frozen, that there weren't any technological advances. Like, I can't believe that all of this technology is advancing suddenly now that the world is in balance. Like, I don't... Well, there has to have been something. So he has to experience change somehow. If it's been a couple of years, if it's only been, like, another year or two, then he's still young. It's still a lot of change for him to process, and he might not be there yet emotionally and mentally. But if it's been, like, 4 or 5 years... I mean, then he's a straight-up teenager, and he should have seen enough change to be able to deal with this.
I don't think then, you know, considering that, I don't think it has been. To me, it seems like it probably hasn't been that long since the defeat of Ozai.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it.
Because if you think about the promise, Zuko is still figuring out how to be Fire Lord, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't think there has been a lot of progress or major social or technological changes made in the time that since Aang was released, or since Aang defeated Ozai. And I think probably the you know, you said he made tons of progress really quickly in order to learn the different forms of bending and stuff, and now he gets, you know, it's like he's come to this point where he can slow down a little bit, mm-hmm. but he still has to be the Avatar. So I think he's in a really tough position because, you know, how does he live? You know, he's reached his primary goal after being woken up, right? Returning balance to the world in so much that the Fire Nation does not rule everybody. But at the same time, he still has to be the Avatar. So I think the idea of spending a day, you know, reliving a day from his past when he was happy is extremely appealing to him. And it probably hurts a lot that he doesn't get to, you know, it's not happening in the way that he wanted.
It probably hurts in multiple ways. I mean, not only for him that he had the excitement and then he was put down. But there's also a huge chunk of it that's got to be like, okay, there are Air Acolytes. They're legitimately, this isn't just cultural appropriation. They are legitimately interested in being new members of the Air Nomads. And I want to introduce them to our traditions. And granted, I might not know everything about their traditions, but you can get started somewhere. And I think he was really excited to get started down that path. And you can't, because the meadow's gone. Like, it snowballs into being just a worse and worse thing until they eventually recover in the very end. But the whole time he's just like, no, I can do this. I got this. No, it's fine. It's cool. I got this. And then we're just like, Aang, stop. Bro, you don't got this. It's okay. They're selling fucking cabbage cookies. It's not okay, Aang.
And his interactions with Toph in that scene, too, are so typical of his character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really shows off that he still is Aang at the core, and he has this stubborn streak where he just says, like, it is because of the way it is. When, if you think about it, like, a second, and maybe if he were older, he would have reacted differently. He could have said, well, it's important to me. And then Toph may have been more understanding, but he was just like, nope.
Yeah, because, and this is what got me is, like, Aang says, this is the tradition, and we need to honor the tradition. We need to we need to honor the tradition. And the way he sees that is just, this is what you traditionally do, so you just go through these motions. You just do it, right? But that's like, that is the worst thing in the world for Toph. Because she can't stand doing anything without a reason. I mean, let alone traditions. Like, that's a core thing for her. But it's shown all over that she's a rebel in these kinds of ways. Like, a serious rebel. Because who was it? Katara says, oh, if you need some money, you can just charge tuition. And Toph is like, why would I charge tuition? It's important, like, work. And I want to have there be more metal benders. Like, I want me and my legend to grow. And the fewer people that can come, because I charge tuition, the fewer people will know my amazingness and pass it on. Like, there's no reason for her to charge tuition other than money, and that's not a good enough reason for her. And for so many schools, it'd be like, that's why you found a school, so you could charge tuition and make money. But she has no desire to do that at all. She just wants to grow her fame. Which I love. She would totally be a Sith Lord.
I take it that you guys really like Toph, right?
Yeah, yeah. Toph is... I'm a big fan of Toph from the show and in this comic.
I will say, up until this point, Toph was my least favorite character in Avatar. She always struck me as incredibly bratty. But I actually like her now that I've read this comic. I like her a lot.
I will agree with that 100%. Not that I didn't like her during the show, but in the show, she's a super, like, two-dimensional character. Because she comes in later, she, like, her motives are clear-cut and simple, and her character is almost a caricature. She doesn't have half the depth that the other people on Team Avatar have.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes her stand out in that way. And she stands apart from them so often because of it too, because of her character being so stark black and white in a lot of ways. And these other characters are deeper and have shades of gray to them, so that when the show, if you have a character who's black and white, it stands out because these others are so great. And that's what I really love about this comic, is it takes a character that I liked because she was fun to watch and lovable in a way that, like, lily livers and dunderheads, like, this character has immediate charisma in so many ways, and you want to love her, but she just doesn't have the depth as a character. And this comic does a great job of adding that depth where you need it. Like, showing that she's a rebel, showing that she cares about the future, and that, like, and all the ways that she's black and white, it's just, this comic takes all those black and whites and turns them into grays by saying that every time that she is black and white, it's because of this complex interaction with her past and her ideas and where she sees herself in the world. And, like, it casts a nice character depth shadow back on the entire show when you go back and think about it.
Yeah, and I think it's something that the show really was striving for, in that Toph had this dichotomy where, on the one hand, she was, like, a spoiled brat, and on the other, she wanted to be tough and independent. And she kept saying, like, no, I'm independent, when she would act spoiled. And I think part of the frustration is that she just seemed like, I wouldn't even say a contradiction, just someone who is in denial for a lot of the show. But here, this sheds a... we knew about her past with her parents, but I think seeing her handle something that has a lot of emotional depth made the character feel a lot less contradictory in ways that are uninteresting, and contradictory in ways that seem like, you know, really strong character development.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, her interactions with her father in this are just gold. Every single one of them. I love them all. Because, you're right, like, in the show is just, oh, no, I'm not a weak, frail little girl. I'm tough, and I'm great, and let me go. Like, it is that whole, like, it's almost that, like, teenage rebellious thing, just in a different way, and it's not half as interesting. But in this, after the interactions with her father, are brought to light, you realize it's not just the rebellion part of, I mean, Toph is a rebel in so many ways, but that's not what made her leave. What made her leave is A, her pride, but also her parents had no respect for her as an individual. Like, they saw her as a figurine, as a doll. Like, and that's what she wants most from them, is their respect. That's what she wants from everybody. Like, she wants respect from everybody, but it matters coming from her parents.
Yeah, and the only thing I wish had also been fleshed out was, the whole time she said, like, I know I've caused you a lot of trouble, but that's, I think, the closest she got to an apology to her father. And I know she didn't really owe him one, and maybe I'm missing something, but it just seems like after running away, she could have at least said something like, I'm sorry, I worried you, or... I don't know, like, I feel like she was a little bit in the wrong as well in her handling of it. But then again, Toph does not have tact, so...
No. I can't see Toph apologizing too much for some of this stuff. Like, I think she would see herself 100% in the right in having ran away. And apologize for the trouble it caused, but not apologize for doing it at all.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
So then the other dynamic character we're getting here, the new character, is Satoru. What did you guys think of him? Toph's love interest. Ooh.
I thought he was interesting. I think the two of them played well off one another because I think they each character facilitated growth in the other. But I'm glad that it wasn't like super heavy handed with the love interest part. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could kind of see it, and then it became like, it was confirmed to us that he's definitely a love interest because of Sokka's commentary about Oogies.
Yeah.
But yeah. If it wasn't for that, I don't think I would have assumed that it was a love interest type of relationship.
Yeah, it doesn't start off, though. It starts off with one word, like, Toph Senpai. like just like the hero worship is what it starts off as.
Yeah.
Which, she would say, is... totally legitimate. Like, yes, you should worship her, especially if you're future forward. But by the end, I think they've come to a mutual respect in a lot of ways, and like, yeah. By the end, they're both more fleshed out characters, and the relationship is more complex.
Mm-hmm.
Although what I will say that I really appreciated is the way, so a whole thing between Avatar The Last Airbender and Avatar Legend of Korra is the way that your previous lives roll into the future ones. That question of, I don't remember who asked it. One of the characters asked, do you think it's possible for friendships to last through multiple lifetimes, right? And what I love is that Santoru ends up getting approached by the cabbage guy. So you get the idea that he becomes the chief engineer for Cabbage Corp. So then Satoru and Toph are Cabbage Corp people. And then in Korra, it's Korra and Asami for Future Industries, and Korra still butts heads with, like, just the rivalry between Metal Benders and Cabbage Corp and Future Industries and the Avatar. Like, that is now confirmed in multiple lifetimes. I don't know if that was on purpose, but I like that.
I hope it was. I really appreciated the birth of Cabbage Corp
in
this. Like, that was actually my favorite moment in this comic, just because it's... It was one of my favorite throwbacks in Korra, where we just, like, I think we see the corporation getting blown up or something, and he just...
They get framed. They get framed for being the Equalist
that's
supporter.
It. And then, like, as people are getting dragged out or arrested or something, the owner, like, just runs across the screen yelling, "My Cabbage Corp!"
Yes. Actually, one of my favorite things from that first season was there's, like, statues of all of these people, right? There's a huge statue of Toph over the police. There's a massive statue of Aang. Like, there's statue of this Team Avatar all over Republic City, and it's awesome. And then there's also a really great statue of the cabbage guy and his fucking cart of cabbages. I just love that that was it. Like, I love that. I love that he's right up there in statues with everybody else.
Totally. He deserves it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about other favorite moments, though, because I said that was my favorite moment, but I have, like, a few that tie. Where Roku and Aang were reunited.
Oh, yeah, I liked that a lot.
That was, like, the sweetest moment in all of comics.
Aang starts to apologize, and Roku's just like, nah, bro, hug. Yeah.
But it's also, like, almost like a child who ran away from home or something being comforted by a parent. That is the feeling it evoked in me. Like, Roku is so paternal, and to me it almost mirrored kind of like what Toph and her father experienced, in that Roku wanted something for Aang and could only give advice that was from his perspective that didn't fit the current situation at all.
Yeah.
And then they had to reconcile.
And I mean, that's the big problem here, is that this problem is entirely one of the future. And it's one that none of his previous avatars can, well, I mean, I say none of them. Maybe Avatar Wan would have experience with this kind of change. Like, there's not somebody you can quickly go to. And the only reason Yang Chen is so useful is because it's Yang Chen's festival, and Yang Chen is the one who bartered the deal. And if it weren't for that, I don't even think she would be particular. Like, this is a question that, this is going to be the defining challenge of Aang's tenure as an avatar. Even though he defeated Ozai and ended the 100 Years War, like, that was great and all, but his legacy is the founding of Republic City and the change that he spearheads for the future until Korra, which then is just even more. Yeah, my favorite moments, I mean, of course, were Toph moments. I think it was when her father tells her that she's the greatest earthbender of all time. Because I'm just a sucker for those moments when people get their goddamn respect. I love those. My favorite moment in all of cinema is in Return of the King, the third Lord of the Rings movie, where the fucking four hobbits are up there. And they bow to Aragorn, and Aragorn's like, no, you bow to no one. And then everybody bows to them. Oh, man, I bawled like a child in the movie theater. That was fucking sick.
Aww.
That shit's, I don't know, that shit gets to me. So then when Toph finally gets to hear her father say, no, you're not my daughter. You're the fucking greatest airbender of all time. Or greatest earthbender of all time. Like, yeah, motherfucker. It's awesome. Like, that's all she's been wanting for years now, is that respect, and she gets it from the person that matters from the most.
Well, we've shared some pretty poignant moments, I will buck the trend and say I really loved the kaiju battle at the end of, towards the end of number 3.
Right, with giant, like, yes.
Aang made a giant, like, Megazord out of stone.
Yes.
And then
the head.
Yeah, they had a kaiju battle. It reminded me of the beginning of Pacific Rim.
Yeah, it does blow a hole right through the middle of him. Oh, God, that was so sad, too.
Yeah. But no, I did actually really enjoy that part. I thought that was a cool way of handling that, and it shows Aang's creativity, instead of going, oh, this guy's so huge, how am I going to even punch him? He just gets on his level.
You just make a fist just as big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, when you get attacked by monsters, you have to build your own monsters.
Mm-hmm.
No, but that also, like, that fight was a really good climax for this story in so many ways. Not only because it was an awesome, sick fight between two kaiju, but also, like, because you see the spirit and he looks so huge and so intimidating and he looks so much more bigger and powerful than all of them. And then he loses. And he loses relatively quickly. And then you realize that, like, and then he says, like, I was right this entire time. And you realize, like, you know he's wrong, but part of him isn't. when he talks about, like, no, you just fucking murdered the shit out of me. Like, I used to be stronger, but who the fuck taught you how to metal bend? Like, I was the only metal bender. That was mine. That's what made me strong, and you took that from me. Like, these humans are growing more powerful in so many ways past what the spirits had ever wanted or thought that they could. And it's displayed in this fight in such an awesome way that, like, you saw him before terrorize the entire town and nobody could do anything. The Avatar could barely do anything. The Avatar had to broker a deal just to save her own life. And here in this fight, like, okay, tear the metal off because you got metal bending and then punch him in the fucking, right in the chest. Done. 1-2 punch. Out. Like, it was so climactic because you have that epicness of the kaiju thing. Like, it doesn't seem like a little fight, even though it's over so quickly, and the ending is so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a really good balance.
I agree. I actually really like that ending because it was unexpected. When the comic started, I was thinking, like, oh, we're going to get a lesson about, you know, learning to accept one another's differences because this is Avatar. but it ended with something far more complex than that, and I really appreciated it because this is Aang's issue now. It's like you guys said, he defeated Ozai, but what defines him now is how he's going to deal with the messy world where there's not such a clear cut right and wrong. And his dealings with the spirits fall under that category.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you can't just solve everything by saying, I'm the Avatar and I want to talk to you and then letting, like, love and friendship. Yeah, like, you can't just, like, let love and friendship win the day every time. As nice as that would be, it just doesn't work like that. So, seeing Aang have to defeat an enemy in a way he didn't want to and then struggle with that again, even after the war is over, is, I think, a good way to take the narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really, I grasped how much of a thing it was, like, the complexity of the situation when General Old Iron was like, I don't care if you have a healer, bro, you just fucking shot me through the chest. Like, you see this hole? You see how you can see through it? I'm fucking dead. Like, I'm sorry that you didn't mean to do that. Bridge between worlds? Yeah, right, sure. I'm dead, though. I'm going to turn into serpent lobster spirit energy and go back into the ocean because you just fucked my face up. Like, sorry, dude. No, you can't heal this. You can't fix this now. This was fucked up, and you fucked it up finally. With authority, you fucked it up. And congratulations, you're the victor. Good job. Bye.
I think that's important because it's a lesson for Aang in that, because there are going to be obstinate people out there that will never, ever want to talk about it. And, you know, this guy is one of them. Ozai was one of them, but Ozai was such a clear villain that I don't think that Aang took that message away from it necessarily. So now when he, you know, he is supposed to be the middle ground, and here there is a person or an entity that doesn't want to, you know, refuses to, you know, talk about it. And so he has to do what he has to do to protect people.
You know, is this the first time we see him kill anything? Because with Ozai, he skirts it because everybody's telling him to kill Ozai. And he decides not to, and he finds an alternative solution. And Aang is big on alternative solutions. Like, that is his manifestation of his airbender training, is to dodge and weave and find the other solution that's around you, other than the straightforward and direct. And he always manages to find that. And I think here, he got caught up in protecting people, and, like, I just realized that right now. Like, he just killed something. Has he ever killed anything?
I don't recall, but...
Especially after the first... Well, I mean, then... Lady Tien Hai... fuck, I already forgot her name. She says, like, spirits don't actually die. They just change form. So I guess he can't have actually killed the spirit, but... I don't know. It really does... It, like, it felt like it had that impact.
Well, that manifestation of that spirit is now gone. She didn't. It's not like they regenerate or something. He's going to come back, but in some other form now.
Yeah,
he will no longer be something else. Yeah, he won't be General Old Iron.
Huh. Oh man, this is a good comic. Gene, you're a good author. You know that, buddy? Buddy.
No, this really is. This was a good one. What was interesting too is, like, you know, we were comparing it to the others earlier. The promise, you know, that, sorry, not the promise, the search, we kind of knew what it was going to be about. You know, it was going to be about searching for Ursa, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this one was interesting because it reunited Toph with her parents, with her father at least, and that wasn't obviously going to be part of the story. So that, I thought, was a nice addition. Because, you know, these, in order to save the world, there were these families that split apart, you know. Well, Zuko was already estranged from his father. Not estranged, but there was, their relationship was bad. Very bad. And,
terrific understatement.
Yeah, and, Toph ran away from home, right? And so we see some reconciliation here. Well, maybe not reconciliation is the right word, but these families are, there are rifts being mended.
Yeah.
Yeah. To bring it back.
Rifts. Bringing it all back to rifts.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too, there was a rift in Pacific Rim also.
Yeah, that's right. 360. Man, this comic in Pacific Rim, oh, crossover. Let's do it.
I would watch that.
I would watch the crap out of that. I would love to see... Oh, see, but it wouldn't be fair, though. Because it would have to be Team Avatar and the Jaegers versus spirits and kaiju. Who would the kaiju be with? There's not, like, a persistent villain anymore. We'll say spirits and kaiju. Because if you have Toph against the Jaeger, it's easy. I mean, she's the greatest earthbender of all time. The Jaegers are going down, thanks to the power of metal bending. Like, that's easy. So they obviously couldn't fight each other.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, like, you could bring Ozai back, and he can, like, trick the spirits into working with the kaiju, and it'll be like a ghost fire kaiju.
We gotta write this.
All right,
we gotta write this and pitch it to Dark Horse. I'm sure Dark Horse could buy the comic book rights for Pacific Rim.
Was there a Pacific Rim comic? I guess I assume that there must have been.
Yeah, it seems like there should have been.
I hope there was.
If there hasn't, Gene, get on that. I'm gonna stop.
Hey, you're so demanding.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Gene. Do what you want.
Follow your heart.
So there are Pacific Rim comics.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I assume there must be.
I mean, the world needed them, so
yeah,
there they are.
Well, now I need to go read them.
And I don't say that at all facetiously. I'm going to pick these up and read them.
So what else is there to talk about with this comic?
I'm kind of disappointed that I haven't read them yet. We got the return of the rough rhinos, or whatever they're called.
Oh, yeah, the rough rhinos.
That was the thing.
Yeah. It was kind of neat to see them back. See, actually, it was a nice interaction to see that they, was that this comic or last week when we found out that they kind of folded in the old army?
Like, oh, yeah.
If you were a member of the Fire Nation, and suddenly Zuko says, we're not at war anymore, like, what happens to all those soldiers?
Yeah, I mean, the guy, one of the rhino guys was like, you took our jobs, kind of thing.
Like, look, bro, you're an amazing archer. I'm sure you can find something to do other than be... Well, I mean, that's the thing. That's what people do when they get trained by the military, and they come home. They go into private enterprise if they don't have anything else to
this
do.
This guy's like, they're basically contractors, right?
Yeah, they're contract security. Which, man, that fucking, the Satoru's dad, fuck that guy.
Uncle.
What a dickhole.
Well, I mean, his dad's a dickhole, too, because, well, the uncle kind of.
Oh, no, uncle, yeah, sorry, his uncle, my bad. Yeah. No, but no, the, yeah, I mean, you're right, it's his parents that were pro-Ozai.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he ran away from them.
Man, F all those people.
Prozai?
Prozai. Jeez. Don't go Prozac, get on Prozac instead. Chill the fuck out.
Yeah, I mean, this. I really like this comic. I'm not really sure what else to say about it.
So. Well, let's just let's rate it then. What all the right, hell? Right. Yeah. I'm going to go first. I'm going to give this... Man, this is tough, because I really like Toph, and I really like the whole interaction between the future and the spirits, and... My, I gotta say, I love the cojones behind having Aang kill that spirit and having that spirit be like, no, bro, I don't care if you can heal me. Like that, man, that, the third issue, the first two issues were great, and then the third issue just really set this off. And it's really neat to see the start of how the industry is going to work, because you go from Last Airbender, which is like feudal, kind of like era level of technology, up to like neo-industrial in or pre-industrial with fucking Korra, like, is a huge jump in technology between the two shows, and it's really neat to see the bridge gapped, or the gap bridged, yeah. Fuck words, right?
The rift. They the rift. Crossed the rift.
Yes, so great to see that rift to be crossed, but I feel like the pacing in this wasn't as good as the first two. The first two just had fantastic pacing, especially the search. The search has, oh. Now that I'm looking back on it, I should have given the search a 5. I really should have. I think I'm going to give this a 4. This is still a really, really good comic. And if you liked Avatar or Korra at all, you have to read this. It's just a fantastic comic. But I feel like it's clearly behind The Promise and The Search. And it might just be because when I read The Search, I was really looking forward to getting those answers, and there weren't answers here for me. I don't know. You know what's going to happen? I'm going to give this a 4, and then next week we're going to talk about it like, fuck, I should have given it a 4.5. But the great thing is, I can go back and edit it later if I really feel bad. So yeah, 4. How about you, Jen?
I am going to also give this a 4. I really enjoyed it. I thought that it had a really good take on Toph, in that she was not a character I liked very much until I saw this, where I think a lot of nuance was added to her character. And I really liked the end, and that I just didn't see it coming. I feel a lot of the time... when shows have a target demographic of, like, you know, younger kids, which, I mean, Avatar aired on Nickelodeon, and I think even though many, many adults love it, there's no argument that it is for kids. Yeah. When the moral plays out to be, like, far more, I guess, problematic than, like, a nice little pretty bow at the end. You know, I just appreciated that Aang couldn't talk his way through some things, and that's okay, because he has to learn to deal with that, and it makes him more interesting, and it makes the story more interesting.
It makes the whole world more authentic and realistic.
Yeah, because it's not a fairy tale. It's a story about people and how they have to deal with certain situations, which is, like, enjoyable. I also had a couple issues with the pacing, and they weren't major. It's just after reading The Search, I felt like The Search was, like, very gripping from start to finish, and this was a little slow to begin with. So, I mean, I still really enjoyed it, so I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay. D-Train?
Yeah, I'm gonna disagree with you guys there. I'm gonna give this a 4.5. This was my favorite of the three. And
I'm sorry, I was expecting like a 3. If you said disagree with you guys, they're gonna be like, oh shit.
No, I'm giving it a 4.5. Okay. Well, I guess what I'm disagreeing on is that this one was my favorite.
Of the three?
Of the three, and that's because this one, was the most, I guess you could say, unexpected. You know, I knew what The Search was gonna be about, and it was very well put together, and I didn't expect the story to unfold in the way that it did.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was pretty confident that Zuko was going to be reunited with his mother in the end.
Yeah.
But this one, I did not have any notion of what it could be about, so I think to me it was just as gripping as the other ones, with the added surprise and lack of expectation that kind of pushed this to the forefront for me. I think I gave The Search 4.5 also. But I liked this one a little bit better.
I will say you gave The Search a 5, because I was the one who stopped it from being unanimous, yeah.
Oh, well, then man. See, okay, objectively, I think The Search is probably still the best of the three. But I like The Rift the best.
Okay, that's fair. I can appreciate that.
But it's not necessarily the strongest comic objectively, I guess. I mean, it's not like we're it's not like we're giving objective scores here.
Yeah.
But I think there are different ways to measure media, especially like entertainment media, because sometimes there's all those movies that people like that are people love them even though they're bad, you know.
Yeah, like I objectively know that Voyager is not the best Star Trek series, but it is my favorite.
Yeah. Objectively, the best one is Deep Space Nine.
Actually, yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
As a 7-season show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because TNG's got some pretty weak...
early seasons.
Yeah.
But then they jumped the beard.
But no, also, grew the beard. Also, I would say that DS9 has the worst episode of all of Star Trek. The one where they have the game.
Yeah, that one's pretty bad.
It's
but
the worst. It's not pretty bad. It is the worst.
Nah, there are some TOS episodes that are worse.
I don't know if it's fair to count TOS in there. Just
Andy said in all of Star Trek.
Yeah, but they're viewed so differently, and I think we're getting into like a whole nother podcast here.
Yeah. So, anyways,
we should do some Star Trek comics.
We all clearly agree that this was good, and all three of these were great comics. And if you are a fan of Avatar: The Last Airbender, you need to do yourself a favor and read these because they, they fill in some important gaps in the story, particularly The Search.
Actually, you know what we should do. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's it.
I was going to say we should do some Star Trek comics, because I think the only Star Trek thing we've ever read for the show.
Oh man, it was that
big IDW
like zombie crossover with the Transformers and
Ghostbusters and G.I. Joe.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, and Star Trek was like the best of those four. Well, G.I. Joe was good too, but yeah, we should maybe do a Star Trek comic or two.
We should do an actual G.I. Joe comic also, because
I started
picking up the complete series volumes from IDW. You know, there's like 15 volumes. It's basically the whole, they have the whole run. And they're, you know, they're good comics. Like, people die and it's based on a kid's toy, but man, I wouldn't say it's just a kid's comic.
Like, it's a good comic. People die. No, but I know what you mean. It's just funny.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
It's funny because comics. Like, that sentence makes sense. Anyway, you guys ready for some trivia?
Trivia.
All right. Well, for trivia this week, since I am at -7 and the other two are both in double digits, I'm not even going to participate. But I have been an arbitrator. I have read both questions And I have deemed that they are both equally difficult and the questions are fair because Jen is at 16 points and David is at 11. And Jen has had a tradition so far of always betting 5. So if she bets 5 and gets it wrong, then they will be tied at 11. If David gets his question right, then he will have the come from behind victory. So this is important that they are fair and even, but I have no role to play because I'm just too damn far behind. So we're going to go and have Jen go first.
Wait, doesn't it make more sense if he goes first? Because then if he gets it right, we're tied.
Yeah, I mean, there's suspense either way, I think.
Okay.
I'm going to have you go first, Jen.
Okay, I will.
Wait, so is Jen asking me first?
Yes.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah. Jen, you're going to ask David first.
David? Okay, so.
Oh, man.
This is about the whole Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra universe.
Now, you only need 1 point.
Me?
Yes.
Well, that's assuming that Jen will get it wrong.
Yes, but if Jen gets it right, then you have no chance of winning anyway.
But she could, yeah.
I would say you guys don't even need to wager points necessarily.
Right, if we both our questions wrong, then Jen wins.
Yeah.
And
if you both get them right, then Jen wins. Jen has to get hers wrong, and David, you have to get yours right.
Okay, so just go, I won't wager. We'll just go off of that.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, I am going to list 4 kinds of bending. You need to tell me in what order they appear to us in the Avatar universe.
Okay.
So, metal bending, fart bending, blood bending, and lightning bending.
Okay. So, let me... So we have metal bending, fart bending, blood bending, and lightning. Okay, so lightning is Azula, for sure. That's the first person we see bend lightning, I believe. So, and I'm pretty sure Azula appears in season 2 at some point. So that's not going to be the first or the last, because I'm fairly confident that the bloodbending stuff happens in season 3. Maybe not. Well, metal bending doesn't happen until we see Toph, so that's definitely at least in season 2. I don't even remember when there's fart bending. But, the only way you could probably bend a fart is with air bending. So that could really be anywhere in the show. Whose fart was bent? I think is the question here. Oh man, I'm gonna get this wrong.
Maybe not. I'm gonna have to put some music in the back.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to like puzzle this out in my head. So I know so there's like a matchup with Azula and Aang and Katara under Ba Sing Se. I'm pretty sure that was in season 2 at the end. But we saw Azula before that when Ozai kind of sets her on Aang because he feels that Zuko's not doing his job. Shoot. I think it's fart, lightning, metal, blood. Okay, that'll be my final answer, because I don't think I'm able to like puzzle it out better. So fart, lightning, metal, blood. Let's go with that.
So Andy, is he correct?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
You
were close, because the fart
close.
You didn't know because you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Oh, that's in Korra?
It's in Korra.
Okay.
Sorry, I figured that you'd be like, well, it wasn't in Avatar, and then go from there. Well,
I couldn't remember, because that's okay.
It could have been.
So was that fart was last?
Mm-hmm.
Was but I you, right the other
yeah,
farts?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well.
Oh, now I feel bad, because we were wondering whether or not a Korra one would be fair, because you hadn't seen all of Korra.
Was that in the first episode?
It's later in, actually.
Yeah. It appears, like, after all the other kinds.
Okay.
Yeah.
David, ask Jen your question anyway for Shiggy's. I wanna see if she can get it right.
I feel like we should give David partial credit for actually remembering the order of the other three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was... I had to pick that up.
For fucking show.
Jen?
Okay, so this is also a put things in order question. Okay. So I'm going to list four members of the Order of the White Lotus, and you're going to have to put them in order of appearance.
Okay.
It's easier than it sounds.
All right. So, okay. They're going to be, this is just the order I'm reading them in. Paku, Pian Dao, Jiang Jiang, and King Bumi. So put them in order of appearance.
So it was Paku,
Pian Dao,
Jiang Jiang, and King Bumi.
Oh man. Oh. I remember Paku's name, but I don't remember the actual appearance and the other two. I'm gonna say King Bumi first.
If you don't remember who they were, like, the name isn't the test. So if you can't remember who they were, we can give you hints about who they were.
Okay, in that case, I need hints for the first three, I think.
Pian Dao was the swordmaster. Paku is the northern water tribe's a waterbending master.
Oh, okay.
And what was the other one? Zhang Zhang is the firebending master who stepped away from his country.
Okay, I remember. So, and then who was the last one again? Or that
King,
was Bumi.
King Bumi.
King Bumi.
Okay, well, so.
He's kind of unforgettable.
Yeah. Okay, so. King Bumi. I think they first went to the Earth Kingdom for help before going to the Northern Water Tribe. Because Northern Water Tribe was the end of Season 1. So I'm going to say Bumi first, and then Northern Water Tribe dude. And then the one with the guy who left the Fire Nation happened when Aang burned Katara's hand, and then she discovered she could heal. So I'm going to say that guy third, and then the Swordmaster fourth. Final answer.
Judge Andy?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope.
You got Zhang Zhang and Paku switched.
Because remember, she gets burned and she learns she can heal. And then when they get to the Northern Water Tribe, it's not a surprise to learn that waterbending heals.
Okay.
And they say that women are healers. So go with the women.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
When you were talking it out, I was like, oh, she's got this. And then you just like tripped right over the logic of it. I was like, all right, fine.
Yeah,
You guys both screwed up on the logic portion, so.
Womp, womp.
I don't feel too bad about David's question anymore. You guys both got it wrong. But for the record, David, you only lost by 1 point. We're going to say that you wagered 1 and Jen wagered 5. So Jen ended all up right. with a score of 11 and you ended up with a score of 10. I figure that's all. That's what it would have been.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine with me. Those were not easy questions.
No, they weren't. Those were good questions, though. Yeah. Like, for a death match.
So we have crowned a new winner of our little arena, and it is Jen.
Winner. Jen!
Sorry, David. No longer the reigning champ. I'm going to take that out of the notes right now.
Well, you know, I'm used to winning something and then not getting my trophy for it, such as fantasy hockey.
God damn it. I will get that fucking fantasy hockey trophy to you someday soon.
Andy and I are both big hockey fans, and we play fantasy hockey, and I won the league this year, and Andy was like, I'm going to get you a trophy, and he didn't. So.
I have all the things. I just need to finish making it.
Yeah, okay. Season's all the way over. We have a Stanley Cup champion.
I know.
Which means you had the entire playoffs.
I know. I need my whole garage to do this properly, and you haven't seen my garage.
All right. So, I forgive you.
Okay. Well, I just saying like it, to, but I don't feel like you actually are. Anyway.
I would like to have it before a new champion is crowned, because I don't want to have to win the league again.
Just to have the trophy for a while?
Yeah.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
Anyways. So. Let me say what the next.
Okay. Well, wait, hold on. This whole trivia, shebang was brought to you by Patreon. If you want to become a patron, go to patreon.com/motorcycle. If you want to become a patron, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. Sign up for, I don't care, sign up for a penny. A penny just shows us that you like the show. It's really easy. You can be done in 2 minutes. And I would genuinely appreciate even a penny a month.
Or, if you don't want to give us a penny, maybe rate us on iTunes. That would be cool.
Hey, yeah. But you know what? For 50 cents a month, you can tell us, what to do next. Trivia, quotes, or fight night. And we will change what we're going to do just for you, the patrons. And if you do more, you can tell us what comic you want us to read. And even more, we will send you a comic book out of our long boxes. Not one from each of us, but one from one of us. I don't know which one yet. Kind of depends on what you are as a listener. We got something for Raymond that was just for Raymond. Which, Raymond, I hope you've gotten it by now, because I didn't send it by certified mail. It's been like months and months. Yeah. That's it for this week. What do we have coming up next, David?
Oh, man. So,
now that we're done with Avatar.
I picked this because I don't remember if I mentioned this last week, but I started getting comics again. Did I?
No. You have such a love-hate relationship with your pull list.
So the reason I went to get... I started a new pull list because I wanted to get all the Star Wars comics. And, of course, I decided to just make it an even 10 so I could get the discount. So one of the comics that I'm getting right now is the big Marvel crossover Secret Wars, which is in fact the fourth iteration of a Secret War type crossover in Marvel. So in celebration of that, we will be reading Secret Wars. So next week we're going to read Secret Wars, which came out from 1984 to 1985. It is a 12-issue miniseries. It's all on Marvel Digital, so if you have it...
Written by Jim Shooter.
Yeah, written by Jim Shooter, and it's known for two important things. One is that it was the first appearance of Spider-Man's black costume in issue number 8. That's not really a spoiler, because it's on the cover. But the other thing is that this had a toy tie-in. There was a series of Secret Wars action figures, I think made by Kenner, that were basically the reason this comic exists. So we're going to be reading that. The week after that will be Secret Wars 2 from 1985, which I believe is 9 issues. I'm not really.
Yep, 9 issues, also by Jim Shooter.
Yep. And then, that has the Beyonder and everything. There was actually another comic called Beyond, which we read a long time ago when we did our Dwayne McDuffie series. That is a tie-in to this because it has to do with the Beyonder, hence the name Beyond. But we're not going to read that again. Instead, we're going to read Secret War from 2004, which has nothing to do with the Secret Wars. It just has the same name. But it's actually, if you played Marvel... What's that game? Marvel Ultimate Alliance? Yeah, I don't remember if it was the first one. I think it was the second one. Well, there's the opening mission on one of those games where you go to Latveria is based on this comic.
Nice.
So, and I think that's 5 issues. All 3 of these series are on Marvel Comics Digital Unlimited. So if you have a subscription, it's really easy to find them. And if you are a co-host of the show, I pasted the MCDU links into the show notes, so you don't even have to search. You just click.
Hey, but if you're not a co-host of the show, you can go to www.welcometocomics.com. On the left, there's a little button that says Future Shows. You click on that. We'll have a link to Amazon where you can find the exact trade that we're going to be reading. And I'm going to plop that link in, and I'll have it say MDCU. It'll take you straight to it from there as well.
So, yeah, that's going to be the next little round of episodes. So if we do trivia again, prepare for a lot of Marvel questions.
Very good.
Dun, dun, dun.
David will reign supreme. But anyways. Supreme. And, you know, if you want to patronize your local comic book shop, go check out the current Secret Wars run, Secret Wars series, I guess you could call it, which is actually, it's okay. It's a John Hickman book, so, you know, I like it.
All right. World building.
There's a tie-in to the comic called Thors.
I've seen that. Thors.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
All right, carry us out.
Coming up. All right, everybody. I guess that's it. Maybe I'm probably forgetting something, so why don't you do it, Andy?
Nothing. That's all of it. Just go to the website, www.welcometocomics.com. I already did the Patreon thing. You're good.
So thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.